Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Blog Talk Radio show, the Couple Speak Relationship Forum. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I broadcast live each month on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm very excited to bring you all tonight's 45-minute episode, Life Your Way, a talk with author Amy Wood. Dr. Amy Wood is the author of a very, very wonderful book that I have read cover to cover, so I can really vouch for it. And the name of the book is Life Your Way, Refresh Your Approach to Success, and Breathe Easier in a Fast-Paced World. It's an award-winning personal improvement book that surpasses quick fix self-help rhetoric with a sustainable, really sustainable program for adapting to our constantly hectic, perpetually hectic age. Through psychotherapy, coaching, mediation, and speaking, Amy does everything, Maine-based psychologist Amy Wood has helped countless adults from all walks of life and work basically to articulate and accomplish their own versions of success. She's known for her pragmatic optimism, and she believes that every human being is a unique and valuable individual with the inner resources necessary to overcome any challenge. To learn more about Dr. Wood, visit her website, amywoodscid.com, email her, amywood@amywoodscid.com, or you can just do the old-fashioned thing and call her at her Portland, Maine office, 207-232-0390. So, Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure to be here tonight.
Yeah, I've really been looking forward to doing this show. As I said, I spent a rainy, miserable Saturday really enjoying your book, cover to cover, and I was very inspired, and I thought that everybody, first of all, everybody should read this book. This is not your typical self-help book. I thought it was written with lots of sensitivity, loads of wisdom, and part of what I liked about it was that it had, at the end of each chapter, an apply the wisdom section where practical applications for the things that you've just discussed and the things the reader has learned. So I think people would really benefit from reading this book. And what I'm thinking is that it probably would be good if we just took questions as they arise from callers. We have a few people on the air, and I'm wondering, would that be okay with you?
Sure, that's fine. That would be great.
Okay. So first thing, I was thinking, you know, as people hone in on what's not working in their lives, people are often aware of what is not working. You talk about the lure and the cost of people's over-reliance on external directives and quick fixes rather than on their intuition. And you also talk about how our soundbite culture deceives and burdens us. And I'm wondering, how do you see that happening?
Well, I see that we have so many interruptions throughout the day, so many distractions. You know, there's always something beeping, a signal going off, there's always news coming in. And it's just constant decision making that we have to do because of that. So we're always reacting to things outside of us. And I want to tell you something interesting, and that is that, you know, the real definition of life balance, work-life balance, it's not about having a perfectly balanced life. It's about having balance between your internal world and your external world, and we have lost that balance. We don't have that balance because we are so focused on everything going on outside of us, all these different directives, and we forget that we have our own inner guidance system, which is our intuition, and if we would only listen to that, we would be a lot less stressed, and that's really what my book is about, how to do that, how to tune into yourself.
Yes, and how to develop basically self-trust. to trust that that kind of inner knowing and the inner longings and one's instincts, which is so critical.
Yes, and it's hard to do that because all these outside directives are so incredibly seductive. I mean, you know what it's like. Even if you tell yourself, I'm not going to pay attention if I hear my phone ringing or if I see a text coming in, and we all do that. There's something about looking at technology. It pulls us in. And even if it's not important, we prefer to do that. We prefer to pay attention to those signals and beeps coming in than to look at the person across from us having lunch, for example. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Yes, it is. It is. I know that I'm somebody who uses the internet a lot in my work as not only a therapist but a coach, and I do a lot of my trainings, online. And my experience almost every time is just to get kind of overwhelmed and to feel like I'm never doing enough and I'll never measure up to those external measures of success. And but I'm smart enough to know that this is the trance that you go in into
right.
in our modern day culture.
Right. There is really no limit.
That's
you could
right.
work 24 hours a day and never get it all done because the world is going 24 hours a day all the time. Back to, before the internet, a long time ago, and we only had a few stations on TV to choose from, and you had the morning news and the night news. And now you've got news every moment of the day. It's just going constantly, and not just news, but every conceivable kind of information is coming at you all the time. And the only way that you can rise above that is to look within and count on yourself to set limits.
Yes, I think that's really critical to reduce the noise and the chatter and to tune in. And I think that's really important. Now you talk about demythologizing the old linear concept of the American dream and
yes.
why it's so important to embrace a different model for success. I thought this was really key in the beginning of the book, and I'm wondering mm-hmm. if you could say more.
Sure, absolutely. One thing that I found, and really one of the things that made me want to write this book, I see a lot of clients, I do a lot of coaching and psychotherapy, and I noticed a trend, and that is that many, many adults come into therapy feeling depressed, feeling anxious, feeling like they haven't accomplished much, because they're comparing themselves to their parents and what they accomplished. So I'll use myself as an example. I was raised in the 70s, and at the time, my dad worked a full-time job. He started at a company and retired at that company. My mother didn't work. They shared one car. They didn't have a lot of debt. The house was paid for, by the time I went to college. And my parents didn't have a lot of decisions to make, And early in my career, I would get frustrated with myself because things weren't that easy for me. And it's because the world has changed. It's not linear anymore. That old way, some people do still start at a company and finish at a company and get a gold watch and have a great retirement plan and all that, like my dad. But most of us, we switch jobs about every 3 years now in our country. Even if you're really dedicated to a job, people switch not only jobs, but they switch careers. They go back to school. I did that when I was 30. I went back to school to become a psychologist. People decide they're not happy in their marriage and they don't feel the pressure to stay anymore like they used to. They leave their marriage, get a divorce. You know that because it's the work you do. And that doesn't mean you failed. It just means that there's a new chapter. And that is really how psychologists look at adult development now. It's not a linear track like it used to be where you graduate from high school, then maybe you go to college, then you get married, you buy a house, you raise your kids, you stay in the same town and you die in the same town where you grew up. That's the old way, that whole white picket fence culture. And today, psychologists look at adult development as a series of chapters, So maybe one of your chapters is the chapter where you lived in California, and then you have the chapter where you decided to move across the country and you lived on the East Coast, or you have the chapter where you had your first marriage and that's when you raised your kids, and maybe the second chapter is you come out of the closet. There's so many different chapters now, and the key thing here to remember is that you can have simultaneous chapters happening all at once. It's not like that linear way of you accomplish one thing, like you get your first job, then you move into your first house, and then you have your first kid. Things can be happening all at once, and it can be really overwhelming. For example, you might be starting a new job at the same time your spouse asks for a divorce, and you've got to deal with these two things at one time. Or you're going back to school, and all of a sudden you get pregnant, you know, and you have to deal with that. And it's not always extreme things, you know, it can be smaller chapters too. But the bottom line here is that you have to be paying attention to a lot of different things, and you have to constantly be assessing to make sure that you're happy. Because we start off working toward goals as adults, and maybe you change your mind about things because you get information from so many different sources now. You're always learning and growing, so of course you're going to change your values and your goals. And if you're still on some kind of quest that you're no longer into, you're going to get burnt out. And that's part of what adults go through now. You know, all of us, we reach plateaus in all different areas, relationships, job situations, school, friendships, all sorts of things. You know, the city we live in, the kind of house we live in, where, you know, all of a sudden we feel restless, you know, because there are a lot of options. And we have to look within and ask, do I need to make a change here? And not just for the sake of change. And this is the tricky part, because there's so much pressure in our culture to reinvent ourselves constantly. You know, just look at all of the magazines next time you're at the checkout counter at the grocery store. Every single headline is about, you know, change your life in five easy steps. Have the perfect
right.
body in 1 month, you know. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, getting quiet and slowing down, getting away from the clamor of all the information and really doing some soul searching when you're feeling restless and asking, do I really need to make a change? And if I do need to make a change, how am I going to do it in a way that is conscious so that I'm not just reacting and getting into a worse kind of situation because I haven't listened to myself?
Yeah, well, so, part of what I loved about the book is that it embraces the core concept of the book is that it embraces the whole notion of living a more conscious, intentional, and authentic life if one wants to feel happy and fulfilled. And you know, I talk about that a lot in my work with clients, living a more intentional life, whether you're intentional about a weekend or you're intentional about a career path, that you check in with yourself and you kind of listen to the feedback and you block out some of the chatter and the shoulds and other people's expectations, all the external directives. And it's your whole book really is kind of a blueprint, I think, for how to live a more authentic, intentional life.
Yes, exactly. It's really about becoming better at making choices. It's about being more discerning. Because the wonderful thing about the culture we live in and how fast things are going is that we have so many opportunities. We have so many choices. But we have to slow down and really listen to ourselves and make the choices that are right. Otherwise, we're just going to end up getting pulled in hundreds of different directions that probably aren't right for us.
That's right. And, you know, I loved your exercise in the book, Amy. It's one of the exercises I thought was just so elegant in its simplicity to, for one day, to spend a day de-automating your behaviors and see what happens.
Yes.
Which is if you take it to a microcosmic level, you know, because people might not get, well, how do I check in with myself and how do I be more conscious and how do I get off the, you know, the treadmill of external expectations. But I thought that was a very nice place to begin. Just de-automate your behaviors for one day.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up because one of the reasons we get so stressed is that we think we have to make these big, huge, sweeping changes all the time, you know. And when I start talking with people about listening to intuition, people think, oh, am I going to have to do something huge, you know, like break up with my boyfriend or quit my job? And no, you don't have to do that. It starts really small. You know, it starts with things like waking up in the morning and asking, what do I really want for breakfast today? Do I want cereal because it's what I have automatically, or do I maybe want to have an egg today? You know, it's that simple. Or if you're feeling like you need some kind of a break in the afternoon at work, don't just do what you always do. You know, ask yourself, do I want to go out and get some fresh air? Do I maybe want to watch a funny YouTube video? Do I want to walk over to Starbucks and get my favorite coffee? It doesn't have to be a big, overwhelming kind of thing. And the more you do this, the more you take these opportunities throughout your day to de-automate, the better you're going to get at listening to yourself. And then the messages get bigger. The messages get better, and you become more creative and happier.
Yeah,
because you're really living from within.
Yeah, it's. I remember many years ago reading one of Jeanine Roth's books. She was the the weight. I don't know if you remember her or if you're too young.
Yeah.
You know, she wrote a lot about weight. And she had a revolutionary idea that everybody thought was, what? Are you kidding? She, part of her her concept with women, who mostly women who are struggling with weight, was to take them to a supermarket and and have a cart and just fill it up with whatever you felt like, listening to your body. And her basic premise was, listen to what your body is telling you. Do you feel like you need orange juice? Do you feel like you need bread? What is your body telling you? And that was just on a physiologic level. But I remember people went crazy thinking, oh, no, I can't do this. I can't trust the internal signals. You know, I'll pig out. And that was just about eating. But, you know, I love the fact that in the book you talked a lot about starting with small, low-risk things, small steps.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, it's always really interesting to me that, you know, when we're kids and we're in school, we start off learning little things like addition and subtraction, and then we go to multiplication and division, and years later we go to trigonometry and algebra and all of that. But as adults, we expect ourselves to learn huge things, take really big risks just like that, you know, just with a snap of our fingers. And it's crazy because you don't accomplish anything that way. All we do is freak ourselves out when we expect those really big changes. And
that's
the problem
right.
is, you know, again, the media really pushes us to make those big changes. And we buy into it, and, you know, we read these magazine articles, and we read blog posts, and we watch TV shows that are all about making fast changes, and then we try to do it ourselves, and we think we've failed when we've just applied the wrong strategy.
Yes. And, you know in my experience working with clients, people often are afraid that if they follow their instincts and they listen to their hearts and they listen to their bodies, that they'll become very slothful, very lazy and self-indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
That they won't accomplish goals. There's a lack of self-trust, and your book is all about really developing self-trust.
Yes.
But that I think there's a crisis of self-trust, and I can speak for America, in America, about what happens if you listen to yourself and you're not listening to the external messages.
Right.
And it's
I
a real
think
problem.
The fear is you'll, because the fear is you will be left out. You'll be left in the dust if you stop.
Yeah.
Trying to keep up, and you just take a break. It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare, though. You know, who won the race? The tortoise did, because the tortoise took a break.
That's right. That's right. Now, you also talk about the role of imagination in this journey. I mean, that really permeated the book. How important it is in all the apply the wisdom exercises. You know, you're really helping people draw on their imaginations as they tune in. And I'm wondering if you could say something about how you see it as critical. And if you could share, there was one exercise that stood out to me, the artist exercise, because I thought that exemplified it very well.
Yes. Well, I think that one of the problems we have is that we do not just let ourselves be. We don't just let our thinking just freely evolve. You know, if you look at, let's say, a young kid, you know, when they don't have a schedule, what do? They play, and they imagine, and they wonder, and adults lose that. And the truth is that success really comes from your imagination. And what I tell people is that your life today is really like a canvas. So look at your life like you've painted on a canvas this beautiful picture, and you stand back from it, and you ask, what is needed here? Do I need a little more blue over there? Does the green need a little more, the tree need a little more green, you know? Because you've gotten that distance, you're able to look at your life from a balcony, so to speak, when you look at your life like a picture that's constantly in process. It's a piece of work, a piece of artwork. And when you do that, you tend to be more imaginative and creative because you're not so reactive. And the truth is that if you want to be successful, it starts with envisioning what you want in your mind. That's where your intuition helps you figure out what is it you want to work toward. And if you don't give yourself time off to let your mind wander, to let those visions emerge, you aren't going to get anywhere. I mean, you may get somewhere, but it's not going to be satisfying to you. So yeah. I advocate taking time off regularly, you know, moments during the day, like not spending every minute at your desk, taking a walk if you can, just taking a break, and also getting away on a regular basis to retreat from all the clamor, shutting your laptop down on a regular basis, shutting your phone down, getting away into nature so that you can really do what I'm talking about, just be in your imagination and let your mind just flow. That's where ideas come from. That's where you get really creative and come up with really good ideas for yourself.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have trouble giving themselves permission to just tune in, to get off the treadmill, and to recognize that that quiet inner time, that reflective time, is absolutely critical to happiness and fulfillment and any notion of success.
It really is. Yeah. And I actually heard recently some studies were done on adults who take vacations and those who don't. And every study that's been done on adults who take their vacation time from work, all those studies show that those adults are the adults who are more successful in their work. They get promoted more. They get more raises. They're better liked. They come up with better ideas at work. They're happier in their jobs. The people who say, oh, I can't take vacation because I'll never get everything done or I'll get left behind, those people end up not getting promoted as much. They end up with more health problems. They end up not as well liked. The list goes on. It's just not good to not take vacation. And yet studies show that a lot of American adults, they don't use their vacation time, because they're afraid to take time away from being productive.
Well, they're afraid there's going to be a faster rat or somebody else who takes their place, that they won't stay in the competition.
Right.
One of the things that I say to couples, they come home from vacation and they're very refreshed, and we talk a lot about how can they lean into, in the aftermath of a vacation, how can they lean into that kind of mindset on a daily and weekly basis. Mm-hmm. What is there that they can extract from that vacation kind of slowing down and self-reflection that they could incorporate? How might they incorporate that into their everyday lives? And that's kind of a novel idea for a lot of people.
It really is, but it's really a great idea, because the more you can do that, the more in touch you feel with yourself. And the best messages you're ever going to get about what you should do, I can't say this enough, they come from inside of you. And the thing about those inner messages, intuition is not loud or flashy or boisterous or aggressive. So if you're not stopping to pay attention, you're not going to hear it.
Exactly.
It's not going to force its way to be heard.
That's right. Well, I'm going to need to take a short commercial break. And when we get back, I would like to get into more detail about intuition and trusting one's instincts, because I'm sure there are plenty of listeners who are really struggling with that or wondering about that, how one accesses it, how would you define it, et cetera, because I think for a lot of people it's kind of amorphous concept. In the meantime, just a short commercial break. I would like to tell our listeners about another couples retreat on Star Island, New Hampshire, beautiful, bucolic, magical Star Island, New Hampshire, that I'm going to be conducting with Meredith Richardson, a mediator, conflict coach, and lawyer. We've done this before. It was wildly successful. And the frame of the retreat is to build connection, improve communication, and reduce conflict. It's designed for a total of 6 committed couples, so it's very small and intimate. And it's going to be on August 30th through September 4th. So it's 4 days packed with a lot of what Amy and I are talking about, time for reflection, time for tuning in, also time for sharing, really kind of connecting with what you need individually and together as a couple in order to feel closer and more fulfilled. And there will be a $100 discount for anybody signing up by June 15th. So we're about 12 days away from that. So I would recommend, if you're interested and you just want to find out a little bit more about it, go to starisland.org for details. You'll find out more about the actual event, and you'll find out lots about Star Island. I've done a few of these with Meredith, and I've taken some of her retreats, and it's talk about getting off the treadmill. It's the ultimate medicine. It's just phenomenal. You cannot be stressed being on Star Island. There is no way, unless you just invent it somehow or you force it upon yourself. So Anyway, back to our regular programming. If you're just tuning in, I've been meeting with author Dr. Amy Wood. She's the author of a prize-winning book called Life Your Way, Refresh Your Approach to Success and Breathe Easier in a Fast-Paced World. And we're talking about the whole notion of tuning in, trusting your instincts, slowing down, doing whatever you can to reduce the chatter and the external pressures in your life, and accessing your own inner knowings if you want to create a more fulfilled, happier life. So it's more authentic, it's more true to you. And what I would like to talk about now is the whole your whole frame about trusting one's instincts, Amy. You mm-hmm. provide a I think a wonderful time travel exercise to access and trust one's instincts, especially useful for people who have operated in a kind of automatic or other-centered or duty-driven manner, or for people who haven't developed self-trust for whatever reason. And I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about the role of trusting one's instinct and the time travel exercise, some of those that you've developed for the book.
Sure. Well, one thing that I tell people to do first and foremost is just to take a step or two back and look at their life. And if this really works if you're, you know, an adult and you've had a lot of life experience, and look back at all the decisions that you've made and ask yourself, for times when you didn't listen to yourself, if those times worked out. And most of you, when you do this, every time I've had someone do this, they say, yes, it's very obvious when I haven't listened to myself, whether it was, you know, you're walking down the aisle to marry someone you don't really feel comfortable with completely, and you feel like you're making a mistake, or you accept a job and you know it's not right for you, but someone said you should accept the job. Or it could be something small, you know, even remembering like last week you had dinner and someone suggested you order something and you really didn't want it, but you did it anyway because you thought you should. But looking back and asking, that's the best way to gain confidence in your inner voice, because all of us have, even if you have a great relationship with your intuition, all of us have had experiences where we have ignored it because it's too hard to listen to and follow the instructions. And so if you can do that, if you can identify those times in your life that have already happened where you used or didn't use your intuition, you will see a clear and very powerful trend of using your intuition and having things work out, and not using your intuition and ignoring it and having things not work out. So that's just one way that you can assess how your intuition operates. And a lot of people haven't used it, you know, and that's okay. You can start at any time using your intuition.
Yeah, I think this would be great for, I've worked with a lot of clients who have these very, very vast peanut galleries. They poll mm-hmm. people about what should I do, what do you think? And then what inevitably unfolds is the confusion, you know, that they just feel more confused and more scrambled because everybody's got a different
yes.
opinion. And we get back to, looking at what you're talking about, you know, where have your decisions served you well when you followed your instincts? One of the things I liked about your exercise is that it also, I call it your time travel exercise, that's what I've named
mm-hmm.
it, but you also look
for
forward. The what? What'd you say?
Oh, I said that's a good name for it, time travel.
Yeah, time travel, because you look
mm-hmm.
back, but then you have a section about looking forward 3 years. How might mm-hmm. your life look different if
yes.
you follow your instincts?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that really, I always say 3 years because life goes so fast. You know, if you have goals, it may take more than a year because you're interrupted so much as you're trying to accomplish things. So I often have people imagine, I'll have clients come in and I'll say to them, imagine that it's 3 years from now and you have come back to see me and you're telling me how your life has played out beautifully because you've listened to yourself. And that's a really good way to get a handle on what's important to you. So,
yeah,
you know, you might
great.
Say, you know, oh, I'm in this fabulous relationship. I got out of that bad relationship. It was hard. You know, it was really scary to be on my own, but I'm so glad because I left this person and now I have so much more confidence. I also left that job I didn't like, and I also moved out of the house. You know, whatever it is, getting past the fear and imagining what your life will be like when you allow yourself the freedom of liberating yourself, you know, from what's not working.
Yeah, and part of what I love in the book is that you deal with it as something that can be cultivated, something that's innate in all of us. It's inherent, it's part of us, but that if we're not in touch with it, there are things that we can do to develop our inner knowing. We can develop, I think of it as more self-trust, more self-trust. And, you know, in my opinion, there's a crisis of self-trust in this country. And, you know, people who are so used to asking everybody else's opinion that they don't kind of follow their own instincts. Now, you also, Amy, you talk about cultivating higher and emotional intelligence as really critical to this process. And I'm wondering if you could say something about that.
Sure. Emotional intelligence is how well you get along with yourself, how well you manage your own emotions, and how well you get along with other people. So how well you can engage other people, how well you can cooperate with other people. The higher your emotional intelligence, the more successful you will be. So we used to believe as psychologists that IQ, your intelligence quotient, which is really how well you do on a series of paper and pencil tests, you know, how good your vocabulary is or how fast you can put together a puzzle or spit back memorized numbers. We always used to think that that was the way you could predict success. So somebody who had a really high IQ you thought would do very well out in the world, but actually it's not true. People with very high IQs do not necessarily do well because they don't have emotional intelligence to go with the high IQ. You have to be able to get along with yourself. You have to be able to motivate yourself, manage your impulses, encourage yourself, get through difficult times, know how to deal with really, really difficult emotions in order to be successful. And more importantly, you have to know how to get along with other people, especially in a world where increasingly we have a lot of stress. The way that we deal with stress is we have to use our personal strengths and combine our strengths with the strengths of others. So you have to know, how do I bring out the strengths in myself and how do I encourage the strengths in other people so that we can all work together to accomplish goals for ourselves? And that's emotional intelligence, essentially, how you do all that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you're not emotionally intelligent, you really aren't going to have the ability to deal with the constant stress in this world that's moving way too fast.
Yeah. So it's really taking more responsibility for yourself and recognizing that there are going to be very difficult people and challenging circumstances and, you know, what kind of resources can I draw upon in myself in order to manage this than rather than expecting other people to change or the world to just be in line in the way that I would like.
Yes. And I think one of the best definitions of emotional intelligence, I include this in my book in the chapter on emotional intelligence, is I found at a yard sale several years ago this book. I think it's called The Handy Guide to Grown-Ups, and it's written by a girl. She wrote this in the 50s, a young girl. And she talks about how to get along with different kinds of teachers, and she talks about, you know, the teacher who's always in a bad mood or the teacher who's very obsessive, and she goes on. And she says, the best kind of teacher is the kind of teacher you don't have to worry about getting along with because she knows how to get along with you. And that is emotional intelligence right there.
Yes.
Someone who knows how to get along with all sorts of different kinds of people.
Yes, yes.
They're very flexible.
And recognizing that those people are pivotal along your path.
Yes.
Now we have, we have a question. Let me just take a question, okay, briefly?
Sure, okay.
Hi, caller. You're calling in from area code 917. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Susan. Very, very interesting. And thank you very much, Amy. Interesting stuff. I had a quick question. You did mention the beginning of the program about life balance, your internal world versus the external world. And we have to learn how to tune into ourselves. And what we really need to do is to set our own limits. Well, I think that's hard for a lot of people. I know that's hard for me. So what would you say to someone? Is there a particular exercise that you could give someone? We may know it intellectually. I need to set myself a limit, but old habits die hard. We're a bundle of habits.
Yes,
and that
we are.
May be a job, that may be a job in itself, just being able to control and manage our own limitations.
Yes.
What could you say, an exercise or something that would be able to make that more manageable to be able to, balance the external versus the internal world?
This is an issue that most of my clients come in with. You know, they're harried, they're frazzled, they have way too much to do, they have no downtime. And I tell them to start with just taking a minute a day, just a minute, and shutting everything down and just being, not necessarily thinking about anything or doing anything at all, but just seeing what that's like, to just not be focused on anything and not have any noise. And, you know, I deal with people who are so busy that sometimes they say, are you kidding? I don't even have a minute. You know, I have a job, I have three kids, I have all this responsibility. And what they find every time when they do this, they come back and they say, you know what? Just taking a minute really helped me to be more productive. It helped me to be more focused. It helped me to be more calm. And then they see that they actually, when they expand like that, when they take that minute and let themselves unwind a little bit, that actually they might be able to do that a little bit longer. And so then I say, well, why don't you just do it 5 minutes every day? And then we increase it. And they don't just get into a meditative state, but maybe they'll say, you know what, I can take a half hour and go for a walk in the woods, or I can take 20 minutes and just play with my dog in the backyard. And anything that they do where they're allowing themselves to take a break, they see that, you know what, they actually come back to the world of technology and all of these responsibilities and interruptions with a greater sense of focus, and with greater sense of confidence, and with fresher ideas, and maybe some intuitive messages that they got when they were away taking a break. So I can't say enough that it's about starting really, really small, not expecting, you know, oh, I'm going to take a week-long retreat somewhere, and a silent meditation retreat. You know, that would not be a good idea because it would be too much of a shock, and it probably wouldn't help. So if you're really, really overwhelmed, start just in really small ways to give yourself some peace and quiet and see where
that goes. That's interesting, and that is helpful, because I tend to be a very all-or-nothing person, and I think many of us are. And I always think, well, I should do this for 15 minutes. And you're saying little baby steps.
Yes.
A little at a time.
Little steps. Because the thing is, you know, when you have a really big goal, what happens is you get scared, and then you think, well, I'm not very happy where I am, but I can't possibly do that, so I have to stay where I am. Instead of coming up with a goal that is so ridiculously small, like I'm just going to take a minute and relax, well, sure, I can do that. And then you do it for a minute, and you think, well, that was easy. Maybe I can do 2 minutes or 3 minutes. And this works with anything, by the way. You know, for example, I have people coming to me with things that they really want to accomplish, like maybe they want to write a book. And maybe they've reserved several hours during the week to work on their book, but it's so much. You know, they think, oh, I've got to fill all of these hours, and what if I fail? And, oh, my God, this isn't going to work. So I tell them, you know, why don't you just take 15 minutes this week and work on your book? And they look at me and they say, are you nuts? It'll never get done if I do 15 minutes in 1 week. And I say, well, is it getting done this other way where you're putting all this pressure on yourself? And they say, well, you've got a point, you know.
Great.
So when you start with small little, you know, tiny little goals that are just so crazily ridiculous, you laugh at them, you're much more likely to actually accomplish something.
That's great. Thank you so much. That was very helpful. Great, great program, really. And now I'm really excited to read your book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You will love it. You will love it. Thank you, caller. Thank you, caller. Now, Amy, that gets to our next issue of examining one's relationship with time. I know this is such a critical issue for so many people. We're too busy is one of the chief complaints or excuses I hear from clients, especially from couples. We don't have time to do this, this, or this. And I'm wondering if you could talk about or share some of your ideas and tools for making peace with time, because I think that's so critical to this process.
Sure. Well, we talk a lot about time management, and I don't really believe in time management because I think it's impossible to manage time. You know, the way we talk about it, it's like we're going to grab hold of time and manipulate it somehow. And the truth is that we have 24 hours in a day, all of us, everywhere in the world. We can't make more time. So I like to talk about it in terms of managing ourselves within time. You know, we need to let go of this idea that all this chaos around us can be controlled, because it can't be. All we can really take charge of is what's going on inside of us. And so it's about really being realistic and asking, you know, what can I accomplish within the time that I have every day, and what's really important to me? So it's a matter of priorities. Again, this is about being discerning. So it's about waking up every day and saying, how do I feel today? What kind of energy do I have? What do I have in front of me that I absolutely have to get done? You know, like maybe you absolutely have to go to school or go to work, or you absolutely have to take the garbage out. I mean, there's certain things we need to do every day. But then maybe you say, you know, there's some things I thought I was going to do today, but you know what, I'm really not interested anymore. Like maybe you have plans to have lunch with a friend and you're just not in the mood. So it's okay to cancel that. So the idea is to ask yourself, go within and ask what you're in the mood for, what you have to do, what you want to do, what you want to change based on your internal and external resources. And being really honest about what can be accomplished. And in our world today, we tend to look at sleep and rest as just complete waste of time. And as I've already alluded to, that's a problem, you know, because we don't have enough breaks. Most Americans also don't sleep enough. You know, the average American needs about 6 to 8 hours of sleep at night, every night, and they don't get it because they think if they sleep, they will miss out on something. They won't get enough work done, and so they begin to break down. So when you try to squeeze too much into your schedule and you don't give yourself what we've been talking about tonight, you know, that break that you need on a regular basis to let your mind just go to rest so that you can rejuvenate and you can listen to yourself and so that ideas can rise up and inspire you. If you don't allow time in your schedule for that, you're not really going to get anywhere. You're just going to get burnt out. So what's most important here about time is, number one, to make peace with time and realize, you know, you can't control time. And you know what? It's just going to go faster and faster and faster because of technology, because of all the choices, all the information that's going to continue to multiply. Your experience of time is just going to go faster and faster and faster unless you develop a habit of getting outside of the clamor and resting and relaxing and enjoying yourself.
I love the fact that in the book,
for that.
Yes, well, that you also talked about making room for things that shouldn't be rushed. That what
yeah.
we hear about in the media all the time is multitask, and how you accomplish 10 more things in 1/10 of the time. But you talked about making room for things that shouldn't be rushed, and also encouraging your own natural rhythms and following your inspiration. So a whole different kind of process.
Yes, and I do mention in the book, you know, if you think back, if you want to know how ridiculous it is how we behave today, think back to the idea of the clothes dryer, you know, the idea of the washing machine, dishwasher, all of these appliances that we have. The idea was to free up time so that we could relax more. It wasn't so, you know, we could free up time to do something else fast. And that tends to be how we approach these things today. You know, we have all of these easy ways of doing things. So, for example, we throw our clothes in the dryer and we don't have to spend time hanging them out on the clothesline, and we have some extra time, but what do we do with that time? We do something else that occupies us to the point where we don't have any rest.
Right.
And really what we should be doing is saying, okay, well, I can put my clothes in the dryer. Maybe I'll take some time and read a book I really want to read, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of just packing in more stuff that, you know, really just distracts you from yourself.
Yes, yes. I loved your exercise about imagining that you have 3 extra hours each week to do as you want. How would you carve out time to do that if you follow your inspiration? I thought that was really lovely.
Yes, another way to approach that is, you know, just imagine the perfect morning. If you could have a morning any way you would want it, what would it be like? What would you do? When would you wake up? What would you do first? What would you have for breakfast? You know?
Yeah. You know, I remember when our son was 9 years old, he noticed about me. He said, you know, Mom, you seem to always be missing 15 minutes. that was a great one. It was really very eye-opening for me, and it was very pivotal in terms of really trying to change my relationship with time, where I've always been guilty of trying to cram too much in because there's so many things I want to do, and coming to the recognition that you could live for 400 years and you will never get to all of it. So it's an illusion that if you just move faster or do more, you'll get to it.
That's right. And
anyway,
you know what, it's just fine, right, if you don't get to it.
That's right. That's right. So, Amy, speaking of time, we are out of time, believe it or not.
We are.
We need to end the program. I would love to, you know, just thank you for your input and for your wonderful book and for all your wisdom. You've obviously put a lot of time and energy and thought and heart into this. I would also like to thank our listeners and to let you all know that Dr. Wood can be reached at amywoodscid.com or at her Portland office, 207-232-0390, if you'd like to get in touch with her. The book, once again, is Life Your Way, Refresh Your Approach to Success, and Breathe Easier in a Fast-Paced World. I would strongly, strongly, strongly recommend that if you haven't read it, run to the store, mindful of time, but go to that store and get that book. You will not regret it. You will love that book. So thank you again, Amy. I really appreciate you being on the program.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of
fun.
It was
really
fun. Thank you. It was a good way to spend my time.
Yeah, good. Me too. Now, my next episode will be on Wednesday, July 8th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I will be announcing the subject for the show and whether or not I'll have a guest ahead of time. So have a good rest of the spring and see you in a month. Take care. Bye-bye.